From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi may soon be able to put the initials U.S. in front of that Attorney General title, and that's getting some serious home state applause.
I'm delighted to see the large number of Floridians that are now going to be in positions of power and influence in Washington, D.C.
Also this week, with former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz out of the running for U.S. Attorney General, what lies ahead for him and the seat he just vacated. Capitol reporter Margie Menzel will have the words of some possible candidates.
I am strongly considering running for Florida Congressional District 1.
We'll also see what could lie ahead for Florida's restrictive abortion ban now that a state constitutional overturning is moot, and we'll learn some secrets of preparing the perfect Thanksgiving turkey. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. President-elect Donald Trump has tapped former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi as his new pick for U.S. Attorney General. Tristan Wood reports, although she was Trump's second choice for the job, Bondi has been his longtime ally.
Bondi was nominated just hours after former Panhandle U.S. Representative Matt Gaetz withdrew from being considered for the role. His nomination brought bipartisan criticism, citing concerns about his lack of experience as an attorney and allegations that he sex trafficked a minor. Barry University political science professor Sean Foreman says Gaetz stepping down shocked no one.
Why Trump thought about nominating Gaetz in the first place is a bit of a mystery. Was he a foil to, say, hey, look at this guy, and when he gets shot down, then it makes it easier for other nominees to get through? Or did they really think they could push Matt Gaetz through this process? Or is there another plan for putting Matt Gaetz in a different position down the road? So I think that needs to be revealed in time.
Bondi's selection made more sense to state political watchers. She was Florida's attorney general from 2011 to 2019. She was a prosecutor in Hillsborough County for almost 20 years before that. Bondi also has a long-standing professional relationship with Trump, getting campaign donations from his foundation all the way back in 2013, serving on a drug policy panel under his last administration, and being one of his attorneys during his first impeachment trial. Unlike Gaetz, she is also in the good graces of Republicans nationally. As Florida AG, she signed on to a national lawsuit opposing the Affordable Care Act. She also advocated for Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh during his confirmation process, appearing in national ads supporting him.
The Senate needs to put gridlock aside and confirm Judge Brett Kavanaugh.
Her conservative bona fides aside, she previously signaled support for issues that now run counter to the direction of her party. In 2017, as Florida AG, she signaled support for LGBTQ employment protections when a bill codifying those protections was making its way through the Florida legislature. Here she is speaking with WFSU at the time.
Of course, it's something I would support. We've always had a great policy in my office regarding LGBTQ employees in my office and protecting their rights. I'd love to take a look at it. Of course I would, sure.
Foreman doesn't think she will have any difficulty getting confirmed by the Senate.
She was one of the attorney generals who brought the case of the states fighting against Obamacare. So liberals are going to be upset about that. But all of it that I'm saying is basically her background is going to be insignificant compared to the other nominees. This is smooth sailing. I think this is an easy check mark now for the Trump administration to say they've got a solid attorney general nominee in place.
Bondi is also a partner at the lobbying firm Ballard Partners. Justin Safey, also a partner at the firm, applauds her nomination. He says her selection, along with several other high-profile appointments to the Trump administration from Florida, will serve the state's residents well.
Florida has really punched below its weight in Washington for many years. And as a longtime Florida resident, I'm delighted to see the large number of Floridians that are now going to be in positions of power and influence in Washington, D.C.
Florida Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried agrees that Florida Republicans have been at the center of forming Trump's administration, but views that as a negative.
They're wanting to make America Florida. And we've been the lab rats of Project 2025 for the last 6 years. And so that's what's happening, you know, that Trump is taking a lot of Florida people up with him to Washington, D.C., and it's one unethical person after the other.
What direction she will take as U.S. Attorney General is unclear, but Trump seems convinced he has found his person, writing in his announcement post that she will be a, quote, America First fighter. For WFSU News, I'm Tristan Wood.
Now that former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz has resigned from his Northwest Florida seat, there's a lot of interest in replacing him. Who are the potential candidates? And will Gaetz' seat really be empty when the new Congress returns? We get more on the story from Margie Menzel.
President-elect Donald Trump nominated Gaetz for U.S. Attorney General, but the congressman withdrew from consideration amid calls for the House of Representatives to release the findings of a sex trafficking investigation with Gaetz at the center. After just 8 days as the nominee, during which Gaetz met with senators who would decide his fate, he wrote on X, "While the momentum was strong, it is clear that my confirmation was unfairly becoming a distraction to the critical work of the Trump-Vance transition." Gaetz can't legally rescind his resignation from the 118th Congress, but it's been unclear whether he could join the 119th Congress, to which he was elected this month. But on Friday, Gaetz told conservative commentator Charlie Kirk he doesn't plan to do that. A number of people are interested, though. Republican Representative Michelle Salzman of Escambia County has already thrown her hat into the ring.
There were hundreds of documented cases of physical assault, torture, rape, and death, but the school remained open.
Salzman sponsored a new law that provides money for surviving victims of the Dozier School for Boys, a state reform school that is now closed. The measure appropriates $20 million to be divided among survivors who apply for compensation. It has taken years to pass. The survivors are known as the White House Boys because the atrocities took place in a small white building on the Dozier campus. Here's Salzman.
As I listened to the testimony from these victims, as I watched these documentaries, the heat just came over me. My face got flush. My throat's swelling up, my stomach is turning, and I can smell the smell of that room. I can still smell it.
Salzman also sponsored proposals to impose term limits on Florida's county commissioners, a measure that failed, and another to combat human trafficking, which succeeded. That measure would require the State Department of Children and Families to conduct more oversight of adult safe homes and tighten standards for hotels and motels where trafficking may be taking place.
It creates adult safe house standards and requiring certification for providers of adult safe houses. It provides for age-appropriate education and public awareness at certain homes. And it creates enforcement standards for hotel training and signage.
Meanwhile, another prominent Republican is also considering a run for Gaetz's old job. Jimmy Patronis, Florida's chief financial officer and state fire marshal, wrote on X on Tuesday, quote, "I am strongly considering running for Florida Congressional District 1. We've got an historic opportunity to fight the swamp, end lawfare, and return power back into the hands of Americans." Patronis, a former legislator from Panama City, is facing term limits and has shown interest in running for governor. As CFO, he's championed the My Safe Florida Home program, showing that insurance premiums drop when homes are hardened against storm damage. Following this year's hurricanes Helene and Milton, he warned Floridians who have sustained such damage not to fall for scams and asked them to clear such offers through his office.
In some cases, you've got quality contractors out there that work with a reasonable set of terms, you know, and provide an estimate. In other cases, you have somebody knocking on your door, noticing you got roof damage, asked you to sign a contract, and now they have taken over your benefits. And that's predatory.
As state fire marshal, Patronis has become an advocate for firefighters. He's backed legislation that provides benefits for firefighters with cancer and occupational hazard. He understands what motivates them and what brings them down.
A three-year-old child had entered into a retention pond back in 2017 in Palm Beach County. And all I could think about is the child didn't make it. And some first responder had to go out there and wade into the retention pond to grab this child. And somebody had to go tell a mom and dad they're never going to hug their little baby ever again.
It's up to Governor Ron DeSantis to set the date for the special election to fill Gates's seat. I'm Margie Menzel.
Coming up on Capitol Report, post-election, Florida's six-week abortion ban remains in effect. Lawmakers met this week, and that was a big part of the meeting agenda.
I am hopeful that we can revisit the restrictions currently placed on women and their ability to have agency over their own bodies.
Another question in advance of the 2025 Florida lawmaking session is whether those who support open carry will have better luck than they've had in the past. But this week, the incoming Senate president essentially shot it down again.
They oppose it. I trust my law enforcement officials, and that's where I stand.
A native of Haiti who now lives in Florida worries his adopted home is beginning to take on some of the more unpleasant trappings of his homeland.
You know, again, these are things that you don't think about until they start to become under threat. So you take these things for granted.
And we'll chat with one of Florida's most acclaimed chefs on the secret sauce involved in preparing the perfect Thanksgiving turkey.
Get a high-temperature oven to make sure that your oven is firing off at the right temperature. So,
what's next for abortion access in Florida? Legislative leaders tackled that question as they gathered recently for their reorganizational session. Regan McCarthy has more.
After a proposed amendment to protect the right to abortion received 57% of the vote, falling shy of the 60% needed for the proposal to pass, abortion access advocates said the majority of Floridians have made their feelings on abortion clear, and they're hopeful lawmakers will listen. Sarah Parker is executive director of the group Voices of Florida.
What we're going to do is take the movement and the power that this coalition has built, and we're going to take that movement and power and take it right up to Tallahassee. We're going to take it right to their doorsteps. We're going to make it obvious and very clear what we want, and what we want is for that near total abortion ban to be overturned.
During the reorganizational meeting of the new legislature, leaders on both sides of the aisle weighed in on the issue, including House Minority Leader Fentress Driscoll.
In light of the clear mandate of a significant majority of voters, the very same voters who sent us to this chamber, I am hopeful that we can revisit the restrictions currently placed on women and their ability to have agency over their own bodies and give medical professionals the clear guidance that they have been asking for.
But incoming Senate President Ben Albritton has already said he doesn't have an interest in revisiting Florida's current law that bans most abortions after 6 weeks or the amendment that attempted to overturn that law.
Regardless of a majority or not, it did fail. And our law says 60% is the threshold, so they fell below that and failed.
Albritton says he's happy with that outcome and points out he joined Governor Ron DeSantis and his administration in efforts to fight against the measure. That's another issue some Democrats say they hope to address this session. Democratic leaders have discussed plans to file a bill that would block future administrations from using taxpayer dollars to campaign for or against a proposed amendment. But Albritton says he believes the state funds were well spent.
To educate Floridians of, quite frankly, many of the lies that I saw on television, and that is that we have no exception for rape, incest, health of the mother, human trafficking, those are lies. And to clarify that, using that money for educational purposes matters to Floridians because we wanted them to cast a vote based on accurate information.
Florida's law does have exceptions, in certain cases for rape up to 15 weeks, and for fatal fetal abnormalities and to protect the life of the pregnant person. But abortion rights supporters say the exceptions don't work well. Under the current rules, abortions have been delayed and denied, in some cases putting the lives of women at risk. Incoming House Speaker Daniel Perez says he plans to carefully review all spending made by the state government, including funds used to fight the failed amendment.
Put that into the bucket of where are taxpayer dollars being used and how are they being used and what are they being used for? Any sort of taxpayer dollars that has ever left the legislature for whatever use will be under scrutiny and we will be looking at it.
Perez didn't address abortion rights during his remarks at the reorganizational session, But records show Perez did vote in favor of the current law when it passed back in 2023. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Florida gun owners are speculating whether 2025 will be the year the state finally passes a law that allows open carry. It already has the governor's support, but as Adrian Andrews reports, there's one top lawmaker who sees things differently.
Second Amendment groups have long sought an open carry law in Florida, yet the state's newly elected Senate President Ben Albritton shot down the likelihood of passing an open carry bill next year. The legislative session starts in March, and Albritton told reporters after being sworn in that he stands with the Florida Sheriff's Association, which opposes open carry.
And I stand with them today in opposition. They oppose it. I trust my law enforcement officials, and that's where I stand.
Pro-gun groups got the state to loosen its grip on firearm restrictions last year. Governor DeSantis signed a constitutional carry bill into law that gave gun owners the right to carry their firearms concealed without a permit. Yet gun activists like Eric Friday recently told the Florida Roundup that's not enough.
That is an unconstitutional deprivation of that right.
Friday is the lead counsel of Florida Carry Incorporated. He's been working alongside other gun groups in Florida to push lawmakers to pass open carry policies. Florida is one of four states that doesn't allow the open carrying of firearms in public spaces, either with or without a license.
Florida Carry is going to continue this fight. We are going to get the right to open carry because currently there is no right to carry a shotgun or a rifle in the state of Florida outside of your home if you're not hunting.
Gun advocates' frustration grew after the governor went on the Bob Rose Show a day before the November election to offer his take about what was on the ballot. The show, which airs on 97.3 WSKY in Gainesville, featured DeSantis telling folks to be on the lookout for an open carry policy next spring.
Yeah, I'd much rather have open carry than weed, but that's just me, Governor. And we really...
Well, you may get that in this upcoming legislative session, so stay tuned on that.
This wasn't the first time Governor DeSantis publicly supported open carry. In 2023, he vowed to sign such legislation with the support of the Florida legislature. Now with Albritton at the helm of the Senate chamber, it's unlikely lawmakers will be sending an open carry bill to the governor next year. At least that's what Albritton told reporters at his first news conference.
Senators, they file bills all the time about various issues. If a bill gets filed that deals with that, then we'll take a close look at it, see what the implications are. But at the end of the day, it's due real caution.
Albritton's anti-open carry position doesn't fall far from his predecessors, former Senate President Kathleen Pasadomo. Last session, Pasadomo refused to take up proposals that loosen the state's current gun laws out of fear that it would make police officers' jobs harder.
I will support with the sheriffs of this state who are the experts. I am not an expert. I don't know one end of a gun from another.
But there may still be hope for gun rights advocates. Albritton did not shoot down a potential provision that would lower the minimum age for young adults to purchase a long rifle. The proposal, which failed last year, would have changed the limit from 21 to 18, marking a return to prior state law. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Florida International University professor Dimitri Saeed Shami comes from a long line of advocates for the freedom to read. The FIU artist in residence created an exhibition called The Unreading Room, which responds to book bans and restrictions in Florida schools in recent years. He tells us about his long family history of fighting censorship.
Where I grew up in Haiti, there was censorship, you know, mostly relating to the regime that I grew up under, the Duvalier regime. And it was mostly a kind of, you know, dictatorial, autocratic, don't make us look bad kind of censorship. So it really wasn't until the last that year or so, when I started to actually delve into my family history, I realized that my visceral reaction to the banning of books that I manifested in that show actually went much deeper than just a reaction to the current political moment that we're feeling. I started to research my own family history, my ancestors, starting with my grandmother, who was an educator, but I didn't realize that she had been an educator who specialized in the end in helping people that couldn't read normally. So I mentioned in the text for the show, Edmond Laforêt, and I mentioned my grandmother, Simone Brière. My grandmother, of course, I knew. Edmond was always an ancestor that I didn't know. He died in 1915. He was a poet, and he died as a result of a political protest. He drowned himself by tying a giant Larousse dictionary around his neck and jumping off of the bridge in Jérémy, where my family was from. So that really, really underlined and made personal this material that for me was just like, we should be able to read what we want. And as a person that grew up queer in Haiti, but didn't have access to any materials that could help me understand that. And I felt really, really oppressed by that. You know, again, these are things that you don't think about until they start to become under threat. So you take these things for granted. I took the fact that I was an immigrant in this country for granted until 2016 during the run-up to the 2016 election, and it became very obvious. And similarly, you know, with the book bans, you know, here it just started to become aware because I follow the news and I see what's going on, and I just couldn't understand how people that were essentially not readers themselves were being given license to end the accessibility of a book for an entire school system. These reactionary policies and ideas about what it means to have academic freedom have affected, you know, the way that we teach. And I believe that my most powerful way of having agency personally as an artist, as an educator, is to just do the work no matter what, you know, and to make it speak for itself. So I think that the question that I have for the future is, what will literacy become? You know, what is literacy becoming? I think that, for example, now we're in the midst of trying to understand what is factual literacy, what is truth literacy, what is AI literacy. How do we navigate this new world where it's really, really harder and harder to tell the difference between fact and propaganda, you know? And also it's really hard to have the attention span that literature requires. You know, we are no longer really reading 19th century novels that, you know, took 800 pages, you know. We're listening to podcasts, you know, that's a different form of literacy. We're watching YouTubes, that's a different form of literacy. And how that's changing us is, I think, an open question for all of us. And I certainly don't have the answers. And I'm just as implicated in it as everyone else. And we'll see what happens.
That was FIU professor Dimitri Saeed Shami talking about his exhibit, The Unreading Room. This story was produced by WLRN's Elise Gregg. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, stuffing or dressing? To brine or not to brine? With the holidays upon us, Chef Justin Timoneri has some suggestions. He's the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services Culinary Ambassador. He dished out tips on the Deeper Dive with Derek Ham podcast, like how to prepare a turkey, and offering some of his favorite recipes. Here's an excerpt.
Let's talk turkey. So for people who are stressing over making their first turkey or any turkey, what's their biggest mistake and what's the thing people do wrong most of the time?
I think the biggest problem you can encounter with your turkey is either undercooking it or overcooking it. You know, I think it all goes really back to kind of techniques and fundamentals, especially when you're cooking a larger bird like that.
Take it out of the freezer. Wait, first you got to take it out of the freezer. That was my first big mistake, was waiting too long to defrost it.
And there are a lot of great charts out there, and we'll certainly be putting out some as well. But remember, it, in all likelihood, will take 4 to 5 days for a turkey to thaw in your refrigerator. Do not put that turkey out on the counter to thaw.
Yeah, I usually, when I haven't made Thanksgiving dinner in a while, but I've been buying fresh turkeys when I do. Okay, so what is the biggest mistake? Undercooking, overcooking?
I would just say, you know, even though some of these turkeys come up with these little pop-up thermometers, mm-hmm. in there, two things. Make sure you have two good thermometers, right? One is going to be an internal read thermometer for inserting down into the thickest part of the meat. And the other one, especially if you don't have a brand new oven, is to get a high temperature oven thermometer to make sure that your oven is firing off at the right temperature. So if you got time and temperature down, then chances are you're going to have a pretty delicious turkey. Now, all the other stuff on top of that, no pun intended, is gravy.
Whether you're going to fry it or whatever
you do, you know, start with the basics, time and temperature.
That's good advice. Inserting in the is in the between the leg and the thigh. Is that usually where you're supposed to put that? Okay.
Right down in there between the leg and the thigh. And you know, you can move it around a little bit and maybe even take a couple readings. Don't always trust necessarily the first place and the first reading, you know, as well. You can take a couple readings. After all, this is science.
Okay. And then what do you do? Do you put butter on it? Do you brine it? Do you slather it with what's your, and also a very important question, is it stuffing or dressing?
Ah, yes. Well, so first, I don't usually brine too much just because I'm not a marinade kind of person necessarily. Hmm. Like I do quicker, fresher cooking. So you'll never really find me marinating meats or brining necessarily. Now, turkey would be the main exception to this. Mm. Generally, I don't do that. A lot of times I get a smaller turkey because I'm cooking a lot of seafood on Thanksgiving. Certainly lots of butter. And again, those fresh herbs really make it sing. So that rosemary, that thyme, all that kind of stuff. And fresh herbs, fresh garlic, which are things you can use throughout most of the dishes you're going to be cooking during that time as well.
So I don't think I got an answer from you. Stuffing or dressing?
Stuffing or dressing? I would have to say dressing because I like mine more kind of in the vein of like corn pudding and more kind of soft.
Oh, moisture.
More crispy.
Oh, so okay.
I saute a ton of you know, onions, carrots, celery, and then I'll do Florida sweet peppers as well.
Okay.
And then mix it in with the bread and herbs and all that stuff. A lot of times I'll add in some country sausage as well. And so, you know, it goes from this kind of, you know, stuffing, oh, it's a great side, to this like, whoa, stuffing. But I definitely don't put any of it, my stuffing or my dressing, inside of the bird anymore.
Right.
And the same reason why I don't stuff different kinds of seafood inside of other seafood, because things cook differently, you know, and so I just don't need to do that. And plus, depending on who's coming to my house or where I'm taking my food, I don't wouldn't want the stuffing with the turkey juice all in it, you know, because sometimes I make a vegetarian stuffing, which I know that I can make that's just as tasty without utilizing any turkey juices.
That was Florida's Culinary Ambassador Justin Timoneri on the Deeper Dive with Derek Ham podcast from the News Service of Florida. You can hear the full episode wherever you get your podcasts. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Elise Gregg and Dara Kam. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Evan Rossi, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week, Thanksgiving week, on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.